All right, so once more we're here with our DRPG Anonymous bi-weekly meeting. I see we have some new visitors this week. Welcome, welcome. Please introduce yourself, and remember, it's anonymous. Introduce yourself by handle, if you would.
Hi, my name is Paws. I enjoy playing Dungeon Crawlers, so the characters may or may not be wearing anything scantily clad. They definitely aren't wearing any clothes.
Hi, my name is RedRock963, and I'm back this week because I want to talk about DRPGs with creepy aesthetics.
Oh, God! Am I late? This is the right week, right? To talk about cute anime girls licking blood off each other?
Yes, this is the correct week for you to discuss that. Not that I think anybody would be ready to admit that one.
Hi, I'm Platy, and I still don't even know why I'm here or what's wrong with the rest of you.
And by the way, why did we tell this guy to show up again?
Nudie girls.
So no one said old games were gonna be this way. Backlog's a joke, you choke. Gamer cards at my age. It's like you always play 2 years behind. When you really need a boost to heart, to health, or even your mind. No, Cal'll be there for you.
She'll say games that are so.
Matt'll be there for you.
When you're feeling that you're stuck,
we'll be there for you.
RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the Jack to my Alice, Mr. Matt Mason.
Okay, I'm not licking any blood off of anybody. Nope, just not doing it.
I can't believe I played through this entire game and only just now noticed that the name of the two main characters are two of my cats. I have a Jack and I have an Alice.
Oh boy. Better start counting. I mean, you got like, what, four more, so anybody else catch up?
I don't think so. Joining us, we've got Tam,
hi.
The anime man. Are we still doing handles?
I don't know. I mean, I think most people know me as Tam around the internet, so.
And special guest, Paws, a.k.a. Andy Privateer, a.k.a. my brother from another mother.
You keep inviting me to these things, and I just feel like there's a level of masochism that comes with that choice.
If anything, it just makes me get dinner started earlier, which is always a good thing. And we teased this last week. We are talking Mary Skelter Nightmares, one of the more infamous RPG Backtrack games when Mike Minkey was still here.
Oh, yeah. We're going to talk about Mike Minkey in the when memories here. This is a game I haven't played yet, but still, I've got quite a bit of memories associated with this, and it's all Backtrack related.
Yeah, I'll get into that in the round table, of course, but in the meantime, why don't we take a brief musical interlude and then we'll start the show proper. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we're talking about Mary Skelter Nightmares, originally released on the PlayStation Vita in North America on September 22nd, 2017. So I thought there was a Switch version of this, but then Tam corrected me, so I'm just going to leave the Mary Skelter timeline up to Tam, because this is about as confusing as Kingdom Hearts timeline. So
no, I think Kingdom Hearts still wins.
Okay.
Yeah. So the teal deer is Mary Skelter Nightmare, the first game that came out. It comes both before and after Mary Skelter 2.
Okay.
So story-wise, you can technically play them in either order because there ends up being sort of something like a time loop that happens. So the events of Mary Skelter Nightmare happen, and then the events of Mary Skelter 2 happen, and then the events of Mary Skelter Nightmares happens.
But the original Mary Skelter Nightmares does not play into that fact, whereas the version that came packaged with 2 does.
So, yeah, depending, you get a slightly different flow in story depending on if you're playing this on the Vita or on the Steam or on PC, which is the original Mary Skelter Nightmares, or if you're playing the new upgraded version that I don't think it's Switch exclusive. I think it's Switch and PS4.
And PC. The PC version of Mary Skelter 2 does have the Nightmares version that comes with 2.
Okay. So yeah, there's like an upgraded version that came out at the same time as Mary Skelter 2. In Japan, you have to play through Mary Skelter 2 to unlock the new, better Mary Skelter 1. In North America, there's like a free DLC that you can download that just automatically unlocks Mary Skelter 1 before you play Mary Skelter 2. And it's sort of fascinating because you really can play it in either order.
And the PC version, it's just automatic.
Yep. That's interesting.
And part of the reason for that is there's actually some novels that were made to tie some of the side characters that showed up in Nightmares that we actually do not have. So it kind of, there's some characters who show up and you're like, who are these people?
That's interesting and confusing at the same
time. Clear as mud.
Yeah.
But still, Kingdom Hearts is worse.
Because the story was kind of crazy anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of fascinating. There's sort of this idea of when you originally start playing Mary Skelter, you play as Jack. So it's a harem game. And Jack is like one of the few male characters or males that are left in the game. And so he also has the capacity to calm the blood frenzy that all of the blood maidens can get into if they're exposed to too much merchant blood. And merchant are the bad guys that the jail endlessly produces, sort of like Dragon Quest slimes. And merchant come in a variety of shapes and sizes, and they're all scary, and they're all designed around the theme of the dungeon. And then on top of all of these merchants, every zone inside of the jail has a nightmare associated with it. And that nightmare is also quite tightly tied to the blood maiden that's associated with that area. So, for example, when it's Little Red Riding Hood's dungeon, it's the nightmare is the big bad wolf.
Makes sense.
There's big bad wolf. There's like someone dressed in Alice's dungeon, which is kind of the one you start in. It's kind of based off of like a deck of cards. It's not necessarily the evil. I think it's supposed to be representative of the Queen of Hearts. The one in the downtown area, which is like a head on a foot and with a tongue sticking out. And as you actually damage it, like you cut off its toes, which is a reference to Cinderella's story about one of the sisters hurting her foot. And I forget.
The shoe doesn't fit correctly.
Yeah, the shoe doesn't fit her foot. And they end up having to like cut off parts of her foot to get her foot out of it.
I think that that's what ended up being my favorite thing about this entire game was how creative everything was. You know, the creativity of the dungeons and tying them into the fairy tales and which dungeon or which girls were related to which fairy tales. I loved all of that with this series or with this game, and I'm sure it keeps going on as the series goes on.
Definitely in the second one, because it goes back to the second and the remake of one, they basically reused a lot of the dungeon aspects from the original Nightmares, as well as adding new dungeons for the new girls. So like Little Mermaid, who's in the second game, she hers is like an aquarium. So you're traveling in this like underwater aquarium with, and you see like seashells and other things that you would see on like the bottom of an ocean.
Mm-hmm. No bad guy based off of a drag queen though?
It's based off of Neptune.
Oh, okay. I was making a Little Mermaid joke, but because Ursula's based off of a drag queen. But anyway. So do we want to get into the story a little bit? Because the story of this game was crazy.
Yes.
See, this is where I thought Tam was going to come in.
Oh, I was expecting Paul to take over.
No,
sorry.
You go ahead.
Okay. So basically, at the start of the game, you see Jack and Alice, who are really the protagonists of the first game, are stuck inside the jail. So what has happened is somehow in the past, a portion of the city, and they don't really specify what city, was sunken down into a crater that was then covered up. And this crater basically feeds on, the humans that are there. So the monsters, the Martians, or Martians, I don't know how it's pronounced because I've heard it both ways, basically feed on, the emotions of their prisoners, as well as feeding on the actual humans. So some humans are putting up a resistance, some don't, some just fail horribly, get captured and whatnot. So you find Alice and Jack inside of this prison, and they're, and the resistance that is there comes in and rescues them. And, so they join the resistance while searching for other what are known as blood maidens, because that was the whole reason the resistance came and broke out Alice, was because they found out she's a blood maiden. Blood maiden is able to absorb and use the blood of the Martians to empower themselves and fight the Martians. Most humans don't have the ability to actually fight the Martians. So,
and doesn't Jack, the male protagonist, have the ability to spray blood?
That comes a little bit.
He's sort of like a reverse blood maiden. So his blood counters the effect of Martian blood.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so they make him a gun that allows him to shoot his blood, which is one of the mechanics. So, because depending on how much blood and how much damage the blood maiden has taken, they can enter a state called massacre mode, which empowers them, gives them some more powerful attacks. But if they've taken too much damage and have had too much blood sprayed on them, because as you're fighting the Martians, they will just erupt blood. This is a bloody game. There is blood everywhere. Everything is related to blood. It can corrupt them, in which case they can enter a blood skelter mode where they're basically berserkers. So they hit really hard, but you can't control them, and they may end up just wiping your own party. It is very easy to game over yourself in this game. although the first game, if you get high enough levels, it's not as easy to do that. But we'll get into this. Jack, who is called a Blood Youth, is able to use his blood to actually counteract that, and that's. It's found out pretty early on, because Alice actually does enter a blood skelter mode in the dungeon with a whole cutscene and everything. And she stabs Jack, and of course he's spraying blood on her, and it gets her out of it. So they create a little gun that allows him to spray his blood. And you can also find upgrades that allow him to do some other things with that gun as well in the dungeons. So for a good portion of the game, you're actually traveling around trying to either recruit the blood maidens that are often about doing other things, or in some cases finding new ones that they were not aware of, as well as trying to grow the tower, because as you complete the dungeons, the tower grows larger, and because the theory is being able to climb the tower is how you can escape the hellhole that is this pit. So you're doing all that, and you also find out there is a sort of some intricacies with the or secrets within the Martians, the Nightmare specifically, where they are kind of keeping tabs on the Blood Maidens to see this. And unfortunately, the game doesn't really get into why they were keeping like tabs on the Blood Maidens and trying to make them grow the tower as well. It kind of leaves that out. And unfortunately, some of that information was in some of the books that, again, did not come out in the U.S. I don't know if they're like digitally available in the game, but I'm sure they're available somewhere online. And there's like whole things with angels and whatnot, and there's like religious fanatics. There's just a lot in this game that just makes no sense and just very weird.
I was just really surprised when I played it how deep the lore went. That it seemed like it was the opposite of a Mario Crystal H, where the whole point was just boobs, you know?
Yeah, Mario Crystal H, boobs and butts.
Like they really went out of their way to kind of create this dark storyline that had me pretty riveted throughout the entire game.
Well, I think, because although this is an Idea Factory compile heart game, I think this is their same site as Idea Factory is multiple studios, of course. I think this is the same studio that does like Death and Request, which also has very intricate lore, but is also very dark.
Mm-hmm. The also the opposite of Nep Nep.
Totally the opposite of Nep Nep. Because I'm on the Steam page right now, and when we were talking about the nightmares being very integral to the different characters, the head one with the foot we were talking about, which is supposed to be, you know, representative for Cinderella, has actually some rats on its head.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. And there's actually also like a symbol you'll see on all the different nightmares, too, that signifies that they're a nightmare. Like on the one for the Cinderella's one, it's on the tongue. Kaguya, who's one of the other characters, it's a giant moon, so it's like plastered right there on the moon face. There's a lot of intricacies with the story, and unfortunately, it's very convoluted. Because again, there's also some characters that show up right near the end that, you know, you only see very briefly in the very beginning because they're talking to you in the dungeon and while you're jailed, and then you don't see them again till almost the end, and they're trying to explain some things, and unfortunately it's story information that you're not fully aware of. Luckily, I had someone who, again, would drop into my streams when I was doing this and help explain those characters, because it's like, he was like, yeah, this is only information available in the novels. I'm like, okay.
I still think your average RPG fan, RP gamer, could play the game and understand the story without necessarily needing the side information, though.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I was able to get through, you know, understand most of it without needing the side information. It's just, again, there's a couple characters who show up right near the end who are, you're just like, what?
Yeah, having that information is helpful, but not meant.
Now, surprise, surprise, isn't there somebody that betrays you?
Curse the sudden but inevitable betrayal.
Yes. Yes.
Your creepy daddy.
She's not wrong. It's creepy daddy. Creepy scientist daddy.
Literally creepy scientist daddy.
Creepy scientist daddy, yep.
It's like it's always the creepy scientist.
It's great, though. Like, it is textbook curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Like, he's weirdly slimy and icky from the absolute moment you meet him. There should be zero surprise that he ends up being a bad guy. Anyway.
there's actually, like, this really early cutscene event, or novel, you know, cutscene event, novel event, however you want to call it, where you're like, hey, we should go look into this, and you get, like, three options, and, like, every time I saw those three options, I was like, the only person who's giving me bad vibes is the scientist. I'm going to go look in his room.
And I think that may be required to do to get the best ending.
Yes. Yeah, that is like one of the earliest and only triggers, and it's like very early in the game to try and go for the best ending, is this one scene.
Yeah, I didn't try to go for any sort of ending. I just played through it. I didn't even know that there were multiple endings.
Yeah, there's a bad ending, an okay ending, and a true ending.
I think I just got the okay ending.
Yeah, I think I just got the okay one too.
I got an okay one, and then I think I did get the good one. I'm only missing three achievements.
Nice.
Yeah, so I did get the okay ending, and I realized I got the okay. Oh no, I'm missing four achievements, but I did get the okay ending, or one of the bad endings. No, I got the okay ending, and then I got the good ending.
You're missing the bad ending.
Jack dies.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's multiple bad endings, but a lot of those different bad endings happen at the end if you pick wrong choices. So I picked the wrong choice of how to save one of the characters, and so it messed me up.
Huh, interesting.
We're not talking about the sequels yet, but out of curiosity, is there save data that carries over to the sequels?
If you play Mary Skelter 2 and then immediately go into Mary Skelter 1, there is stuff that can carry over.
But it's only the Mary Skelter 1 that comes with Mary Skelter 2.
Correct.
Right, right. Because if I do play this, or play Mary Skelter 2, I think I am going to have to play through the first game again. Just because you said that version of the game that's on the Switch and Steam is so different.
Well, Steam luckily has both versions of 1, technically.
Yeah, if you play Mary Skelter Nightmares, it's Mary Skelter Nightmares, that's what it's called. That game by itself, that's the original game that was available on Vita and is available now on Steam. That is the one that technically comes before Mary Skelter 2. If you want to play the Mary Skelter 1 that technically comes after Mary Skelter 2, buy Mary Skelter 2. It comes included when you buy that game, whether you buy it on Switch or PC.
Okay. Yep. I have it on Switch.
Yeah.
I think famously it was on sale because I wanted to play all three games for Backtrack, and I had showed you guys the screenshot and went, when I bought it, and went, look at what you guys made me do. but I digress. But no, as far as dungeon crawlers, though, I think that this was one of the more creative dungeon crawlers that I had played. The dungeons were very unique, and the way that you traverse them was really interesting.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Although they did, so because we're talking, I don't know if we're talking one or if we're talking nightmares specific.
Nightmares.
Okay.
Nightmares.
Because the dungeons for nightmares, like, they start off very small and they get huge.
Yeah, because I got horribly lost in the waterway dungeon and could not figure out for the life of me where I needed to go. And it was because I hadn't uncovered like an area that I could barely see on the map.
Oh yeah, no, the maps for one, just as you're progressing through one, just get ridiculously huge. In fact, I pulled this up here because I was trying to remember my favorite dungeon in the game. Oh, I must have closed it. But like, and there's an extra dungeon you can do if you get like the true ending, which is one of the achievements I'm missing.
And then this there being two different versions of the first game also probably explains why I was having so much trouble looking up guides for this, because one of the walkthroughs said to go this one place and it wasn't there, and I was like, did they write this guide based off of a Japanese version of the game or something? And I think I eventually figured out how to get through by pulling up a YouTube video of the Vita playthrough and having to watch for like an hour to figure out where I was compared to where this playthrough was.
Yeah, so
yeah, there is small but important differences between Nightmare and Mary Skelter 1 Remake.
And yep. and the dungeons are actually the biggest because they shrunk the dungeons down.
Yep, that was probably part of the problem.
Yeah, so the dungeons in the one remake are actually a lot smaller past a few certain dungeons. Like a couple of the early dungeons are one for one in size. But as an example here, the original dungeon for the extra dungeon, which is called Underground Cavern, is 100 by 100 squares.
That's big.
Yeah, no, it is a big dungeon. The remake is like 25 by 25 to give you just how much they shrunk some of these dungeons down. In fact, I'm going to share.
So hearing this, I got a question for you, Tam.
Yes.
Does the original Nightmares version, either on Steam or on the Vita, does it have difficulty levels?
Yes. So it does have difficulty levels. The original version of Nightmares loves to punish you for playing on easy, because they reduce the amount of XP and money you get from battles by 50. By I want to say it's like 50%.
Jeez.
Which is really weird, because I felt like I never had any issues with EXP or money playing on easy mode.
But you played on the newer version.
I played the Vita version.
You did play the Vita version.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then if you play normal, you get the normal amount. And if you play hard mode, you get more. And I played the entire game on hard mode, and I never had an issue with money, and at one point I had 99 of all the relationship items, so I was able to max out all the relationships in one go. Because it's like, you really like this item? Boom, 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 boom.
I mean, it's been a while since I've played, so I might have very well started out on normal and went down to easy, which is why I might not have had the money problems, because it's been quite some time since I played that.
Easy is very cakewalky. In fact, Final Mizu, that was the person who was helping me when I was playing it. He basically said when I was doing the final dungeon that I was like on par for levels with like the people who like actually run that.
Because I do know that easy mode pretty much trivializes the nightmare fights, which you're actually supposed to run away from and are supposed to be very difficult.
Yes and no, actually. So you can run away from we're getting into a lot of system stuff now, by the way.
Yeah, that's fine. I think we're pretty much done with the story.
Okay, yeah. So the nightmare fights you can run away from, and you're generally supposed to run away from, but if you're able to stun them, which is like taking out one of their parts or more of their parts really, and you run away, depending on the amount of parts you broke while running away from it, you got better loot.
And to clarify, that doesn't, for those that haven't played this, the nightmare fights are kind of like the FOEs from Etrian. Though I think instead of just kind of patrolling the dungeon like an FOE, they just show up, don't they?
Yeah, they do generally just show up. There is like a noise indicator when one may be chasing you, because you'll hear like sounds that are very specific to like that creature. So like some of them will be laughing at you when they're chasing you, or right before they'll show up. So there is some like indicator you're about to run into one. There's a couple that in Nightmares version, at least, I don't know about one, but in Nightmares, there's actually some that will not chase you throughout the dungeon, because it's very specific instances for that dungeon. Because one of the interesting things of the original Nightmares is there were a couple of fights where you fought giant nightmares, where they would basically expand and get larger, so you had to like climb up and down like a towered like map to fight them, and you mm-hmm. and you couldn't use like you couldn't use items outside of battles and whatnot, so there was like limitations for what you could do when fighting them. So mm-hmm. that made it a little bit of strategy. Unfortunately, that was only, at least in the Nightmares version, I don't know if it's in the one version, but it added a depth to fighting some of the nightmares that unfortunately Mary Skelter 2 did not do. I personally think it was just an issue with trying to program, figure out and program the fights to do that, because like you had to attack like specific portions of the boss that would maybe weaker to cause them extra damage. It was a whole, and those towers had like different mechanics in them where they could fire things and stun the boss or do damage and other things too. So yeah, there was like a lot layered into that.
Right. So getting into some of the game systems, I know that each dungeon kind of has their own blood maiden that you rescue. I could see that like some of them have bows and some of them have like spheres that they fight with and whatnot. In combat, I guess what I'm trying to ask is there any difference between the maidens?
Yes.
There is, and at sometimes there isn't. So the game actually has a very robust job system. And you initially unlock the jobs by having to gain levels.
Mm-hmm.
And you get job points, which allows you to unlock one job. And each Blood Maiden has like five or six jobs, depending on if you have the DLC or not. And the different jobs would allow the Blood Maidens to unlock different skills that you could equip. Because, you equip the skills and you get slots. You can. So the game, let's step back, though, because the game has two currency. We've talked about the money before, but it also has a blood crystal currency. The blood crystals are based off of ABO, normal blood banking, ABORH, ABO plus RH factors. So you have mm-hmm. A blood, A plus, A minus, AB blood, so on and so forth for all those. And you would turn in these different crystals to power up your blood maidens to unlock jobs, unlock skill slots, I think that's it in this game. Yeah. So I have to remember because I've been playing a lot of two. And mm-hmm. so I have to remember if something was in the first in Nightmares versus the second game or not. So I do apologize. So yeah, you can unlock jobs. Each Blood Maiden has like a set of jobs they have access to. And then you when they level up, you can spend skill points to unlock specific skills and equip them. And of course, the different jobs do have like all the same skills. But again, you could mix and match how you want. There are and some Blood Maidens are more prone to melee, like Cinderella, versus Thumbelina, who's more of a mage.
Right, that's coming back to me now.
So each girl has sort of a different pool of jobs that are available to her, and depending on sort of the overall archetype of a Blood Maiden, some jobs may or may not be available to her, or they might be much better at it.
Yeah. Cinderella is actually one of the most OP characters in the first game.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, because she unlocks one that allows her to hit something four times in a row.
Yep, I remember that too.
So the game has a very, very robust job system, and they do continue that in the later ones too. And so and that was one of the reasons I actually began to really enjoy the game was just because of the being able to mix and match the job skills, or just if you spend enough time grinding in the game, you could just have a character with all the skills they could unlock.
I also find it funny that Jack's purpose in combat is to, you know, just spray blood.
As well as items. He's the only character that allows you to use items.
Right.
Although in the first game, the spraying of blood becomes kind of trivialized by late game. So the main reason to have him spray blood was to purge the corruption off of the Blood Maidens. But mm-hmm. by the time you get very late in the game, the amount of corruption because they would only ever enter the Blood Scepter mode, again, their Berserker mode, if they were like fully corrupted. So late game, you didn't have to really spend as much time with him spraying blood as like in early game, because of the fact the corruption doesn't accrue as fast, because they're able to you know, have more blood on them as they level.
Because I love some of their Blood Maiden, or what is it called again?
The Blood Skelter mode.
Yeah, I love some of their Blood Skelter mode.
Although it would wipe your party. I had that happen a few times in the early game where it's like, oh, Blood Skelter mode, game over. Well, great. Because they cast like an AoE on the entire party. Entire party's dead.
I probably didn't have much issue with that. But then again, it was probably easy mode. They're probably a little tamer.
Yeah, no, hard mode, game over, man.
Yeah.
The Blood Skelter modes really play into the lore, like myth and lores for the fairy tales that each character is based off of. So like Red Riding Hood would have like ears coming out and she'd look like a wolf. So and there was also another there was actually three ways of purging blood off of the Blood Maiden. So one was, of course, Jack, which we mentioned. One was the Blood Maidens could actually lick the blood off of each other, which
healed.
Well, in the first game, it depends on the Blood Maiden. So each Blood Maiden, depending on them licking someone else, it would cause a different buff. So, some would heal, some would do a heal over time effect, some would buff attributes. So it really varied. And it would also, you know, clean up their bar,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, purge their bar of all their blood stacks. It would not take care of the corruption, though. And then the other one is at the base, you could rub the blood off the girls.
Using
Jack's blood. And so they would be in swimsuits while doing this. And as you rub, well, some of those swimsuits would, parts of the swimsuit would disappear.
You got to justify that Vita touchscreen somehow.
Yeah. And then they would still be clothed, but it was questionable how much clothing they had left.
Listen, horny gonna horny.
Horny gonna horny. Pause gets me.
Now, I seek out this kind of stuff just because I find it funny. Especially when we're playing in bed and I show my husband a barely clothed girl on my Vita screen and he's like, damn. Like, yeah.
I shouldn't find that funny, but I do.
Oh, it's hilarious. Every time.
Yeah, my wife teased me a few months ago. It's like, yeah, you and your naked girls. I'm like, they're not naked. Okay, mostly naked girls. I'm like, that's better.
That's more accurate.
And we were discussing Nikkei.
Yeah.
Just enough clothes so that the game doesn't get an AO rating. I almost said AOE.
No, Kelly, it's not that kind of game.
I know.
So, what else is there's obviously relationship mechanics. So, each of the girls has their own room, and you can give them items they like to increase their affection. But you can also give them items they like that change the look of their room. So you can actually customize their room to fit their personality, which they will like, or you can dress up their room with things that they don't like to not match their personality. But they won't like you if you do that.
Yeah, by the end of the game, I had so much money that I was just putting stuff in their rooms just to put stuff in there.
Yeah, no, they each have a theme that they do like to go with.
I'm sure that there are guides out there that, like, optimize, like, what each item is and how well it increases their attributes or what have you, but...
Yes, I only looked up the baseline guide. Do they like this or not? Do I have 99 of it? Yes. Okay. Give.
And yeah, you can go on dates with the girls too.
Yeah, my personal favorite is Rapunzel's, because she crawls into your bed and starts eating and starts nomming on your arm, and all you see is her butt sticking in the air.
I somehow missed that one.
Oh, I hate saving screenshots because someone actually clipped it on the Steam page. I was going to share it, and I'm like trying to save it, but it's like I forget where it goes on the stupid.
To be fair, I can never remember how to save screenshots on the Vita either.
It's something like the right top button and the select.
Yeah,
something to do with the select button. Now, getting them off the Vita, that's even more of a challenge.
Oh, God. I can't remember when I tried to get a screenshot off of the Vita the last time and had to email it to myself.
Not exactly easy.
No.
Well, we were having this discussion with a game on the Switch recently, too. Just never easy.
See, at least with the Switch, you can plug your Switch into your computer and it'll just read off the SD card.
Or you can pull a screen on.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, they've got two good ways to do that.
So, but let's see, what other mechanics were there in the game? There, because it is an Idea Factory game, there are lots of mechanics. We've discussed the dungeon crawling aspect, and the dungeon crawling also has lots of mechanics, because each girl has a skill that allows you to change aspects of the dungeon, like Snow White, she drops bombs that can explode walls to increase areas or allow you to create shortcuts through specific walls that have, like, cracks in them. Sleeping Beauty fires an arrow that can push buttons that are over pits. It's also used to destroy certain plants that make try and bite you because there are, like, traps and whatnot. There's chains you can cross over where you have to tilt right or left to keep your balance or you'll fall into pits. Monkey bars that you can use with Rapunzel's hair. Her hair can also, like, reach out and grab treasure chests and switches that are far away. So, I mean, every girl has something. Alice's is the most convenient because it's the fast travel out of a dungeon, and it's also a save point.
Yeah, I kept Alice in my party almost the whole game just for that reason.
Yeah, well, they just don't for the have white to... rabbit. Yeah.
Yeah. Or yeah, but I mean, you don't have to have them in the party or as your active party members. All the skills are available the whole game
once you
unlock the girl. You just have to switch through what order you have, you know, to wherever the skill is on the bar to pick the right one.
I still kept Alice in my party for most of the game just because I liked her.
Oh, yeah, no. Alice, Cinderella. I had a very melee-heavy party by the end of the game.
I had
Snow White,
Rapunzel, and Sleeping Beauty. So I ended up going with a lot of the control mechanics. But also, you put Sleeping Beauty into, like, a sniper class, and she just, like, mows everything down.
Oh, I just had her throwing bombs the entire game because I kept finding really powerful bombs. Like, all the time, just bombs.
See, I ended up using Gretel a lot because I thought that she was a good mage character.
Yeah, Gretel's a good mage as well as Thumbelina. They're both, like, very strong mages.
Plus, I don't know why I gravitate towards the girls with the glasses in games like this.
I love her. I love Gretel's smile.
Yeah, she's just a little bit psychotic.
Creepy.
So, what have we not talked about yet?
Let's see. Covered Massacre Mode. We've covered Blood Skelter Mode. We've covered Dungeon Mechanics. We've covered Licking. We've covered Rubbing Them. We've covered...
I'm sorry. This list sounds wrong, but it is very accurate.
We've covered the favorite items and remodeling their rooms. There was an item limit of 99 items. That wasn't, or either 99 or 999, either or, it was too small for the game.
Yeah, I did have to go back to the base quite a bit to offload.
There are side quests, and you could pick up, like, whenever a new chapter starts, the religious organization would give you side quests you could go pick up to fulfill while you're doing them, doing the different dungeons and whatnot, and you could basically pick them all up at any given time and just complete them as you went. We talked about some of the character skills, not all of them, because I mean every one of the Blood Maidens has their own skills, and you can find parts to upgrade this Jack Spray Gum, which gives him a total of 3 skills on his own. Let's see. I don't think there's really much else that we haven't really covered. We covered the giant boss fights, which is unique to Nightmares. Yeah, I think we've covered everything, like the very obvious baseline mechanically stuff.
Yeah, as dense as the mechanics are in that game, they all fit together really well in a way mm-hmm. that makes them... It's like, if you're going to have a whole bunch of mechanics in a game, they all have to work together. And I think mm-hmm. all sort of like have that feeling of this doesn't come together the way that it should. And Mary Skelter has that feeling of, yeah, this is all sort of complex, different mechanics, but they all fit.
Oh, so I pulled up a screenshot with the menu and it reminded me. So there's also a formation. So like you have your active party and of course you have, there's a total of 10 characters and you can actually pair up the non-active characters with your frontline characters, and different ones when combined allow different mechanic, possibility of providing some sort of buff or something. So like one of them can increase crit rate. I think Thumbelina's allows the character in the front to potentially regain some SP, which is the, you know, spell points basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another mechanic with the allowing you to play around with, you know, your frontline versus your frontline fighter characters, and then those who are not actually you're actually using in combat, and then you can actually switch them in and out in combat as well.
Yeah, I forgot about that aspect.
And then one other thing was there's a system called de-evolution, which allows you to exchange blood crystals to de-level your characters. And when you de-level the characters, they keep a little bit of their stat gains, but the potential is they can get even higher stats. Especially the more you de-level them, and there's like different levels like 10, 25, 50, and 80. And then the other
actually keep quite a bit of their stats if you de-level them.
Yeah, but it also allowed them to get more points they could use to buy more skills as well. So they kept all the skills, and then if you de-level them and level them back up, you would get more points to unlock even more skills that they could equip.
See, I never messed with any of that, unfortunately.
I only messed with it once with Snow White. And this was still while I was, of course, on hard mode. So I ended up I want to say I was like 86 or 85. And I went back to the area I was, and I almost leveled her all the way up to match the other characters in the same time. And it gave her quite a bit of a nice boost.
But I'm not going to lie. When I first heard about this game, I had just written it off as another pervy dungeon crawler.
I mean, it is a pervy dungeon crawler.
Oh, it is.
But it also has a lot of depth to it.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had written it off as a Morio crystal or something like that, and it ended up having the same kind of stuff that I like a Shin Megami Tensei or an Undernauts. Or even an Etrian Odyssey. And I'm saying that because if there are any other people out there who are like that, I'm here to say, like, yeah, it's kind of pervy, but it also has a lot more story than the promotional material would let you believe otherwise. And I even though I do like my pervy dungeon crawlers, I appreciate it when one tries to be a little bit more than that, you know. That, and I really like the game's creepy aesthetic.
very I did not creepy enjoy aesthetic. The creepy aesthetic.
It's a very creepy aesthetic. I think I mentioned this one and Death and Request, which are the same, I think the same like sub studio that made it. Especially since the second game for Mary Skelter has costumes from Death and Request 1 and jobs associated with them. They are creepy enough where I don't feel comfortable playing them because I do not like horror and creepy games, but they were interesting enough that I was able to keep playing them. Although I will say nothing has gotten my heart racing as much as being chased by the things in Death and Request.
See, I'd picked those up on sale recently because PSN had them for under $20, both games. So as soon as I actually get some free time, I plan on playing, at least trying out the first one. I forgot, is Death and Request action or dungeon crawler?
No, it's a... the second game, I have not played the first game, but the second game is a visual novel with, like, a third-person dungeon crawler aspect to it.
Okay, gotcha.
Where you can reach the bad end quite often, and you have to redo it. Crystar is the one that's more of an action RPG, which has a similar vein as Death and Request, but not quite as creepy. Still pretty creepy.
And speaking of on sale, as far as the Vita version goes, I don't think you're going to be finding a physical version of this anytime soon, unless you get really lucky with a thrift store or a garage sale. The price of that one has shot up significantly. When I first looked it up, it was hovering at around 70, and now that's just the cart and the box and everything are like at least 100 to 120 now. Poor Vita. But that being said, you know, you can just get the Steam version of Nightmares or the Switch version that's slightly different.
Yeah, the Steam version is $25. And if you are going with the Mary Skelter 2 with the one included, that is $35.
I would probably recommend just getting the Mary Skelter 2 with first game attached to it.
I found an eBay listing for the one that I ended up selling for like $150-something during the pandemic. It's like $44. I could rebuy it.
Well, I think that they had a couple of different print runs or some Amazon exclusives or whatnot, because I have Mary Skelter 2 on my Amazon wish list.
The U.S. one is expensive. The Japanese one is cheap as hell.
And probably has the American or the English track on it, like a lot of Switch games too. Yeah, Mary Skelter 2 is $50 on Amazon right now.
Yeah, I want to say that it also got a reprint at some point, which probably helps. Or wait, in Japan, it got a reprint. Because I think in North America, it was a limited run games.
Yeah,
it was. That's the one I bought. Yeah, I paid $39.99 for it and ended up selling it for like $150 the day after it came in the mail.
Yeah, I also think I picked up the physical of that and then immediately turned around and sold it because it was cheaper just to keep it digitally than it was to keep it physically.
Oh, yeah, I think I bought it. I think that's what happened when I got it. I was like, oh, cool, yay, I got it. I got my thing in the mail, and it was in the middle of lockdown. And just for the heck of it, I went online, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, no way. And at the same week, it was like 50% off in the eShop. And I'm like, nope, I'm good. I flipped the digital lifestyle. I've gone almost non-physical and everything of these days. So that was an easy decision to be like, I'm just going to sell this $150, spend $20, and I'm good.
By the way, that is baseline prices and not, again, if they come up on sale. Because of the fact these are Idea Factory Games sales do happen fairly regularly.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't doubt if this is like a $10 or $15 here 4 years later sometimes.
I mean, crap, I think when I picked it up...
It's gone down to $7.99. It's...
Yeah, I think when I bought it on Switch, the Mary Skelter 2 with the first game, I bought it on Switch, I only paid like $11 for it, which isn't bad, though. The less than 10 would have been ideal.
Hey, you know what? It is on sale for $7.99 today. So,
awesome.
Where?
Pretty quick. You're listening right now on the eShop.
Yeah.
But is so they
eight,
go
eight,
on
$8? This game is definitely worth $8.
Yeah.
It runs through Monday, the 19th of August. So, if you're catching this right after it comes out, hop on the eShop. $8.
I can't remember if I talked about this on the show or not, but it's hilarious that right after our Dungeon Crawler show, Morio Crystal went on sale for like $8. But I had to message Matt. I was like, wait, which one was the good one again?
Crystal.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Crystal is not on Steam. It's just Chronicles.
So it's like, hey, get more Dungeon Crawler for your buck. That is the nice thing about the pervy ones is that they do go on sale quite a bit.
I must have bought like a, with all the DLC, apparently it said, my Nintendo says I have all the DLC.
For Mary Skelter?
There was a, for Mary Skelter too, yeah.
Maybe
I bought some enhanced editioners. I never buy the, I mean, I would not have bought the Blood Maiden swimsuits, even if it was a dollar, but, you know.
I'll tell you, those swimsuits are very handy because they have a skill on them that increases a Blood Maiden's HP. And that helps when
there was probably like a $20 get the game and all the DLC in one kind of deal at some point.
I mean, yeah. I have the Steam version. I got everything. Because that's been the one thing about the Steam version is it comes with all the DLC already installed because Idea Factory usually releases their games later on Steam than they do on other consoles.
Though I do find it annoying browsing the eShop on my browser when there's a sale and they list all the DLC with the regular games and there's no way to filter that out. Oh, it's not from what I could find on the browser. Because they're having a Nipponichi sale right now. And it's really annoying to try to find deals on a game and having to wade through like 3 pages of Trails costumes. I don't know if anybody else has had a similar first world problem like that.
So I'm not sure. Going back though to the actual discussion, I'm not sure that we've really missed anything on this entry.
And unfortunately, like most of my Vita games, I played most of it with the sound down, so I can't really comment on the soundtrack.
The soundtrack is great at both conveying sort of the creepy aesthetic while also being just beautifully done at the same time. Again, my personal favorite track is Waterside. It's a very solemn track while at the same time just being wonderfully serene, which is very interesting in this game. But I think the whole game just has beautiful music overall. I think there was only one track where I sat down and said, yeah, I do not like this track. And honestly, it was Downtown. Downtown, I think, is the one track I did not like the most.
Well, we'll have to put you in charge of picking out music for this show then.
Well, Waterside is definitely it. I'm going to say that one. But no, overall, the music is good. And I'm not saying Downtown's a bad track. I just don't vibe with it.
Yeah. I'm trying to get better about kind of listening to the sounds of a game a little bit lower or kind of at a low volume so that I can still hear them, not disturb my neighbors or anything. It's just, unless a song is Uematsu or a Yuzo Koshiro track, it's probably not going to stick out to me, but that's okay.
Don't you have your own, isn't there like a buffer between you and your neighbors?
Well, no, I meant like neighbors as in, like if I'm playing in a waiting room or something.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
On the go.
Yeah.
On the go.
I don't like bothering other people when I'm in public.
Why I have headphones. I still have wired headphones just for that reason.
But that being said, I think we're ready for the roundtable unless anybody has anything else they want to contribute.
I think we've covered just about everything mechanically, like all the major mechanics, all the somewhat side mechanics. I'm honestly, the only thing I can think of is I forget if this game had a like upgrade system where you could like sort of forge your weapons and give them better and over time like make them even more powerful than what they were to start with, which cost more blood crystals. I mean, everything in this game is a bloody mess, technically, because everything is related to blood.
I'm surprised that they didn't just call it Mary Blood, but that probably doesn't roll off the tongue as well. But we're going to have a brief musical interlude with one of the songs that Tam picked out, and then we'll be back with the roundtable.
welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we end up getting into the round table, our personal feelings about Mary Skelter's. Mary Skelter's. Why did I say it like that? Mary Skelter nightmares.
There's so many Skelters in the Mary.
Yes. My first question being, what was your favorite slash funniest moment from the game?
My favorite moment was the Snow White relationship scene. So you can have sort of a relationship scene near the end of the game. And I think in the Steam version, you might actually be able to go back and do more of them as post-game. Yeah, I chose Snow White as my bae in my original Vita playthrough. And I thought that scene was so cute. And I actually went on YouTube and I looked at some of the other relationship scenes that you can have. And they all have something they all have sort of some charm to them. But I still think that Snow White's is my favorite.
I think my favorite was how grossed out all the girls were about having to lick blood for the first time. And also,
yeah, that grossed me up too.
And I don't know why, for some reason, I always had canon the blood is tasting very strawberry.
I mean, it is, like, super bright pink.
I know. So I don't know if that's disgusting or accurate, but either way.
Honestly, I love everything with Hamlin. And the reason is Hamlin, like, portrays herself as, like, this ultimate powerful being. And yet, like, half the time when she's talking, she stumbles over her own words. And I just love it.
I guess that would segue in good into the next question, then, which is best girl.
For me, best girl is Sleeping Beauty.
I actually kind of have to agree, mainly because of how lazy she is.
It's not so much that she's lazy, she's just, well, sleepy. She
yeah.
just wants to sleep all the time, and I love it.
No, I don't blame her. As an old adult, I would want to sleep all the time, too.
No, lazy was Kaguya.
Right. What about you, Paws?
Thumbelina, because tiny girl, big attitude. She had a good combination of classes that she could be, and shrinking items could actually make things way better. Thank you, Scientist Coat. I love you.
Yeah. With that, it was, and sometimes it would make it better. Sometimes it would make it worse. So oh, all yeah. you. And
90% of the time, Thumbelina shrinking made items worse. It was that 10% of the time that it made items redonkulously better. That it was just like, how are you supposed to figure this out other than shrinking everything that you get in your inventory? And that kind of became my addiction for like.
Yeah, there's actually like a very early healing item she can shrink that makes it better too. I think it's hardtack.
Scientist Coat is like this generic gear that you start getting a third to halfway through the game. And basically, if you shrink it, it is better than anything until maybe the final dungeon. And even then, I think I still had a couple of girls in scientist coats just because I had powered them up so much that nothing was going to touch them.
So did we have a favorite dungeon?
For me, I think it was the temple. Partly because I like the way that the temple dungeon was designed. I felt like it had fewer dumb dead ends. And in every dungeon crawler, there's always going to be some level of dead endery.
Mm-hmm.
Good dungeon design makes interesting dead ends, if that makes sense when I say it that way.
Yeah.
But I also felt like the temple was where sort of all of the movement mechanics really started to mix up the exploration and gave the dungeon crawling a new depth to it in a way. Like every dungeon, every time you rescued a girl and brought her onto the Blood Maidens, it did give you some new fashion of mechanics. And I feel like the temple is where that sort of hit the ground running.
I think that's because it's the first one where you have Kaguya, who's also able to gives you a barrier that negates some of them. So you can like do a little more exploration unless you had like insane levels where you could just power through some of the traps.
That's true.
My personal favorite dungeon is Waterside. So from the interactions I've had with someone who would stop by my streams when I was playing this, it's a little bit of a controversial pick. but Waterside's my favorite because I love the music in it. It's a very it's both very calming and at the same time sort of a foreboding background track, and it's just I just love being the music for Waterside. It's also where you get Rapunzel, and there's traveling mechanics, going to what Paul's had said, involving her hair where she does it like a monkey bars, and you'll hear her go going across it, and it just amuses me.
Sometimes the noises the girls make while they're doing their movement mechanics are suggestive.
Yeah, but her doing, you know, the Tarzan scream is great.
Yes, that is pretty amazing.
I think I ended up liking the downtown area the best, just because in dungeon crawlers like this, I like areas that are somewhat twisted versions of familiar places. And I will admit the nightmare there that was the giant head with the tongue sticking out kind of creeped me out a tad.
Well, I mean, all the nightmares, along with all the areas, are basically, like, themed towards one of the Blood Maidens.
Which one was downtown themed with?
Cinderella.
Okay, that makes sense then.
Yeah, they're generally themed with the one you pick up in the dungeon. So, like, the one for Waterside is, you know, kind of fashioned like a tower, but then as you break it, you see, like, two babies come out of it, and that's a reference to Rapunzel's two children she had with the prince when he fell out of the tower. Because this, the lore in Mary Skelter, with the nightmares and the areas, a lot of times play back to not just the more common known elements of the fairy tales, but some of the not so common elements. Like, I actually know the full story of Rapunzel, where you know, the prince confronted the witch. He slew the witch, but then when he fell out of the tower, he actually landed on the thorn patch around the bottom of the tower, and he became blind. And Rapunzel was able to leave the tower, but he basically spent years traveling, trying to find a way to heal his blindness. And they eventually met up, and she had two kids that were incidentally his from their rendezvous in the tower. So that was playing into those aspects of the stories that, again, a lot of times are not mentioned when you read the fan fictions that are Disney, or watch the fan fictions that are Disney.
I was about to say, that's not how Tangled ended.
No, it's not. But let me tell you, I read that version of the story to about 300 kids last year. That was fun.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm reading The Little Mermaid next week to my K-1 and 2 kids. And that will be, we'll read a little Disney-fied version. We'll read the real version where she dies.
Turns into sea foam.
Yeah. I think I found one a little bit nicer. She turns into an angel and just kind of looks down upon him. But yeah, that's what the Hans Christian Andersen is. Like, she wanted to be human because humans have souls. Mermaids just turn to sea foam.
Like, what's on the docket for next year? The Cinderella where the sisters cut off their feet?
I do have another one, though. I usually try to read three. I find, like, little 10-minute reads. I've got one about the little Mosasaur that wanted to become a dinosaur.
Ah.
Because the Mosasaurs were the aquatic dinosaurs.
If we do Mary Skelter 2 next year, we can talk about Little Mermaid.
Oh, look at that. Maybe I'll catch up by then.
Yeah. But, so, honestly, because all the girls are based off of, again, different fairy tales and myths, the one that throws most of the Westerners off is Kaguya.
Yeah, because that's an Eastern fairy tale.
Yeah, that's an Eastern fairy tale called Kaguya of the Moon, about a moon princess who descends to Earth and marries a lumberjack.
That's my favorite.
Or woodcutter.
Do they have a big blue ox as a baby?
No.
Oh, okay. Trying to blend the East and the West here.
Do the sequels do anything with the Peach Princess? The fairy tale of the... I think it's a Peach Princess. The girl who lived in a peach? Or am I...
That's Kaguya.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah. The new one at least added in... The two new ones that I'm aware of in Mary Skelter 2, because I'm still playing through that on our Twitch channel, is Altsu, which is based on the... you know, crane that returns a gift.
Ah, okay.
And then Little Mermaid.
Gotcha. I do know that I need to play the two sequels at some point. either this year or next year, so we can talk about the sequels the next time. Mainly because I was surprised that these games got sequels.
Well, it's a little bit complicated, but we can discuss that. We already discussed that when we were going over the information on the game. So
yeah. So I guess finally, I have to ask, do you guys have any memories associated with this game?
So I actually booted this up just doing a random stream on our Twitch channel, and I think I put in two of the longest stream, what is now the third ranked longest stream, and what is now ranked the longest stream on our Twitch channel with this game. I remember, and I had some good people. I had a person who was actually really into the lore come in and chat with me, and was very shocked that I was able to get many of the references that some of them were of. You know, especially some of the minor ones, and he helped fill in some of the ones I wasn't fully aware of. I had a really good time, and then I also remember one night Paul's coming in when I hit, like, I want to say it was like a 12-hour mark on one of the long streams, and she's like, "Have you had anything to eat?" I was like, "Oh yeah, no, I was eating here at my desk just a few minutes ago, Paul's. I'm good."
Why do I always have to make sure that our streamers have food?
Hey, I make sure to eat when I do my long streams. You know, I will get up. I will, you know, I'll be like, yeah, give me like just a couple minutes. I'm going to throw something in the microwave. I'll be back. You know, and I'll, okay, it's in the microwave. Give me, you know, so I'll go grab it here in a few minutes, do some battles. Okay, gotta go grab it. It's beeped, you know. Okay, I'm going to mute my mic while I eat here, but I'll still be here and keep playing while I'm eating. That's how I do it. I think the longest one was 16 hours.
Jeez.
Well, as long as you had bathroom breaks.
Oh yeah, no, I get up, use the bathroom, I grab food, I feed the cat, you know. I do take, you know, minute breaks, because especially with my knees, because I do have bad knees from old injuries, and I got knocked over and it hit a rock and dislocated, and of course my Navy service, so my knees aren't always in good shape, so sometimes I do have to get up and be like, okay, I need to go walk for just a few minutes to stretch my legs. So yeah, no, so I have some good memories of streaming this on our channel. I was also playing it on hard mode, because yeah, the game punishes you if you play it on easy by giving you less money and experience.
Oh, I still played it on easy.
I hate that. Don't punish me for playing it on an easy difficulty.
Yeah, that was my only gripe. I got all the way into the last dungeon, like 80 hours, you know, put in 80 hours into the game, last dungeon, and I was like, no, I just can't do this anymore. I'm going to have to bump it to easy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I really didn't have that much issue, like, getting into fights. I mean, to the point to where when I would get in a fight with a nightmare, I would just deal with it instead of running away like you're supposed to. See, the money and experience thing must have been negligible, because I didn't even notice that it was an issue when I played, because I play all my dungeon crawlers on the easiest difficulty. So getting into my associative memory. So I just kind of put stuff on my Amazon Christmas list. Stuff that I'm interested in playing but not interested in, like, getting right away. And this one happened to be one of them. And, you know, Christmas came and went, I want to say about 2021, maybe a little bit after that. I honestly cannot remember. But, like, in March, my mother-in-law comes over and it's like, yeah, I found a Christmas present that I forgot about. And lo and behold, hands me a copy of Mary Skelter for the Vita. And I'm sitting there chuckling to myself, thinking, wow, my mother-in-law, who is the most prudish person I have ever met, but got me the most pervy game for Christmas.
She probably didn't even realize.
Oh, she had no clue. She just looks at the Amazon list and picks stuff. So I kind of chuckled about that. And then about a year later, was kind of going through my games, kind of trying to figure out stuff that I wanted to purge, and kind of threw that in my bin of stuff I wanted to eBay, but I still wanted to play. I think I had bought the Switch version, or the Switch version of Mary Skelter 2, which came with the first game. So I thought, well, I don't really need this anymore.
Or at least what you thought was the first game.
Yeah. You explained that to me, that that's not technically not the first game.
It's complicated.
So it didn't matter, because it's like, well, I want to play this, but I'm in the middle of a Switch game, so I'm just going to buy it off the PlayStation store. I can't remember how much it was, because I had to, like, put money in the virtual wallet to even buy it. And that's like a minimum of $20. In order to get stuff off the Vita store currently. So I just ended up buying it physically or digitally, put it in my box to eBay, and then later saw how much that game was going for and was like, okay, I'm putting this back because I kind of want to hang on to it.
Yeah, it was a little print run.
Yeah. So needless to say, I was kind of happy that my mother-in-law picked that out for me for Christmas. Because I do like to hang on to my low print run games, just because I kind of like having them in my collection. Most of them I never plan on really selling, unless I like really need money. But yeah, that went right back in the box. I basically did the opposite of what Matt did, because when Matt had the same thing happen, he was like, okay, put on eBay, cha-ching.
Oh, you're stealing my story.
you might have said it last week, didn't you?
Did I? I might have, because it was wrapped up in Marrero Chronicles, too, because it happened with the same thing.
Yeah, but ended up finally playing the game on Vita, loving it, and I will forever hang on to my physical copy.
Pause, you want to go, and then I'll tell my story, because mine piggybacks off yours, I believe.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the thing that sort of stands out in my mind is, I think this was sort of the catalyst, the first game that sort of kicked off the meme that is Pulse Plays Horny Games. And because I know that it was this one, and then Monster, Mon Piece, I think it was called. There was just like a few Vita games, and I played them all in a row, and they were all these sort of like pervy girly games, the horny girl games. And so this was sort of the inception of that meme. And so to me, it always has this kind of fond memory of, oh yeah, it's that kind of game. Have you talked to Paws about it?
See, I couldn't remember if it was this game that started it or when you was playing Criminal Girls in Church.
So I can't remember. I would have to look at my old game played, my year log of games. Let me pull that open. 2017 or 2016?
It would have been 2018 or before, yeah.
So, oh, you're right. It might have been Criminal Girls that was my first. So yeah, so I played Criminal Girls Invite Only January of 2016. But it looks like, sorry, I'm looking through my log here of all the Vita games. Yeah, it looks like there was another big chunk of Pause Plays Horny Girl games. Came with playing Mary Skelter Nightmares, Monster Mon Piece, My Q Labyrinth of Death, and then there's some visual novels in there like Lost Dimension Exist Archive that aren't quite as horny. Demon Gaze, Dungeon Travelers 2. Yeah.
Oh, we talked about that last week.
If Mary Skelter Nightmares didn't kick off, I think it certainly cemented my reputation. A horny game player.
And I had written off the game until you said that you was enjoying the heck out of it.
I do enjoy the heck out of it.
I mean, I tend to not play a lot of horror or creepy or thriller style games, and this and Death and Request I enjoyed immensely, and Death and Request I almost put down as like, this is a little too creepy for me.
I just like stuff that invokes the SMT aesthetic, and this definitely did, especially reminded me of Persona Q.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, they had that hospital, was it the third stratum or something, in the first Persona? That was creepy as all get out.
Yeah.
Well, Pause leads into my story, because I joined RP Gamer in September, I believe, of 2018. And by December, I was like, man, I really want to be on more podcasts with Phil. I want to be on more RPG Backtracks. So he did an episode on episode 198. was on some old sci-fi one. And during the final lap, you should just talk about what you were playing, and Phil would go on and on about whatever. So he had talked about something, asked what we were playing, and I was like, oh, just the other day, haven't started it up yet, but I just bought Mary Skelter. I think we had Slack back then, and I mentioned that I'd seen Paws talking about it, and it was a pretty good game. And I was like, yeah, I just picked it up on Vita. It was like $8. It's on sale. And during the recording, somehow this became a joke about this, and Phil kept bringing it up, and he gifted it to his co-host right on the spot, Mike Minky, and he was like protesting, like, no, don't buy me that game. Oh, I'm going to have to play this game if you buy me this game. And sure enough, Mike proceeded to play that game in early spring of 2019, and I believe if you listen to any RPG Backtrack from the spring of 2019, you can hear his complaints about the game for months. I remember there was one episode where he just spent multiple minutes in a row just reading a list of like 100 junk items in the game. Just, he's like, you know, let me just tell you what some of the items in this game are. And he ended up reviewing, gave it a good 2 out of 5 on RP Gamer, and he did, it was much smaller list, but in his memory here, I want to read the list of items that he had here. It'll only be about 10 things. So he was questioning the contributions of torn pillows, damaged canteens, sturdy sandbags, boring comic books, abstract paintings, cute insectivores, and moody paper lamps.
Those found are all relationship these items you give to the girls.
Yeah, yeah. He said, you know, whatever. It was easy enough to just schlep these all off, but he did. I remember. Yeah, he went on for minutes, ages ago, just talking about that and complaining about why is my inventory full of all this crap.
So, presents for the waifus.
Yep.
Matt. Mike isn't dead, by the way, just retired.
No, yes. In memory of him being a co-host, yes. Sorry, not in memorial. In memory of his contributions to our site and his hundreds of episodes of RPG Backtrack that he was part of. Thank you, Mike.
What made that hilarious was that, so I hear Mike constantly complaining about this game on the Backtracks I was, and then Paws starts playing it, and Paws is loving it, and I'm like, are you two playing the same game? Because I am hearing very differing opinions. And you know, ultimately I went with Paws because there's a reason why I called Paws my brother from another podcast, because we have very similar tastes in games. So it's like, okay, well, I want to boot this up because I want to see who's right. And of course, Paws for me ended up being the one that was right. But didn't Mike also run into a very game-breaking bug that basically just sidelined him?
There was something that he couldn't get through at one point for a while, and that might have been a Vita issue or him on the Vita issue. I don't know. I do remember that complaint too.
Yeah, and he
either powered through it or saved, tried it again a couple days later and got through it, or what.
And it felt really bad for Mike, because nothing sucks worse than, you know, trying to slog through a game that you're not enjoying and then hitting a wall.
Well,
and it's something that you can't control.
Well, Phil ended up putting down the game because of one particular mechanic.
What
the
mechanic? Licking?
No, not the licking. The rubbing the blood off the girls.
Oh.
The licking the blood was okay, but not rubbing it.
I forgot about the rubbing the blood.
Why does it always have to be rubbing with these games?
You got to justify that touchscreen somehow.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even the Vita didn't have a touchscreen, but it had that touchpad on the back.
The screen was touch.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah. Oh my god, that messed me up so many times in Final Fantasy VII. So I had the PSN version of that for Vita, so I was playing it on the Vita, and like if you touch the back pad, it would act as like your movement controls. So I'd be trying to go one way and suddenly my finger would slip and I'd be going the different direction. I'm like, no.
Yeah, you had to kind of configure it for your PS1 games a little bit, because and your PSP ones, because I had mapped the touchpad to the map screen, so that I had to do was just tap the map screen on Persona 3 P3 Portable, and the map would come right up, which was kind of a nice touch. No pun intended.
Maybe not intended, but that was good.
Yeah, but yeah, the touchscreen is a little bit touchy. But it was the only way you could really do anything with, like, extra, the R3 and, or not, well, yeah, the R3 and R2 buttons and all of those extra ones, so. So, yay. Well, I do believe that is a show, unless anybody has anything else they want to talk about with Mary Skelter Nightmares.
No?
I think we did a pretty good job covering everything.
I think so, too.
We licked this one pretty good.
And I think we're ready to move on to action RPGs, because we've got Ease 9 coming up. Just in time for Ease 10. Why did you give Adol a boat again?
It's an interesting subtitle. Truth. Very, very true, but...
I'll just never forget Paws posting an article from the developer or the director of that game, and somebody asked him, would you get on a boat with Adol? And he was like, no.
Hell no!
And it's like, yeah, this guy knows what's up. But Monstrum Nox isn't about boats. It's about jail. I think one of the best Ease games that's come out in the past decade, so I can't wait to talk about it. But that'll be in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, let's wrap up this show. Thank you, Paws, for hanging out.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tam, for taking the night off work to come hang out.
And I'll be back in 2 weeks.
Woohoo! Thank you, my podcast partner in crime, as always, Matt.
Of course. And hey, Tam, isn't it happy birthday?
No, that's actually next week's, in 2 weeks show.
Okay.
Yeah, we finished.
I knew we had an episode coming up with Tam's birthday, but
yeah,
I'll just edit that out.
Yeah, we finagled next week's show to be on Thursday, because otherwise I would be taking like 3 days off, and that would hit my paycheck really hard.
Yeah, we had to do some messing with the show schedule around this year, because I think Josh was going to end up being like on for 2 months straight.
I'm on for five. Five shows straight.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining, though.
Encyclopedia Tam. That's good, man. Whatever we got to do to have you here. We can move days, times. We've moved the world for Andy. Move for you, Tim.
One hour.
We'll even talk about horny girls for Andy. Aw, you guys the best.
And thank you, listener, for hanging out with us. We'll see you in a pair of weeks with Monstrum Nox. So have a great rest of your week, and we shall talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.